Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, RIA has introduced a lot of changes in our immigration program, and I know you represent a lot of regional centers. I know you represent a lot of developers, and I'm sure they're probably thinking to themselves, how do these changes affect the market? Or maybe there's other market changes. Essentially, without the market, without the investors, there is no EB-5.
Well, you've hit the nail exactly on the head, Mark. We do represent a lot of developers and regional centers, and we ourselves do go out to different countries marketing. There has been a shift. There has been a change. Right now, we are seeing a lot more projects than perhaps normal. Maybe it's the high interest rates. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And we are being asked all the time, where are the markets? Where do we go? How do we find investors? So we have different ways and different methodologies, as everybody knows who's been listening to our show for so many years, of going out to marketers and to people who are out there in the field actually doing the hard work of bringing in the investors. And today we actually have Sam Odani, who normally we would find hanging around somewhere in Washington, D.C., but this time, no, it's not Washington, D.C., is it, Sam?
No, I have been traveling in South Asia and East Asia and Southeast Asia, and I've just finished a multi-week tour of Vietnam, Korea, and Taiwan.
Oh, wow. How long have you been out?
I have been out of the United States for 6.5 weeks now, and I have at least another 5.5 weeks to go in this neck of the woods.
Oh, wow. Yep. So you have been Vietnam, Korea, Taiwan. These are all hot markets even before the changes in RIA.
Well, yes. Historically, if you look back at each one of the last 5 years, Vietnam, Korea, and Taiwan have all been in the top 5 markets of the world. And if you say, well, wait a second, in the last 5 years, you could be affected by COVID. Okay, let's look back at each of the last 10 years. And guess what? Each of these three countries, Vietnam, Korea, and Taiwan, have been in the top 5 markets for each of the last 10 years. And that's true even for each of the last 15 years.
Right. South Korea was actually one of the popular countries prior to China, back when the program just began.
Definitely. Each one of these countries had their day in the sun from time to time. After all, the program is 33 years old now. And a lot of people don't remember, but UK, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and very briefly Vietnam have all shared the distinction of being number one in the world for a period of time. But I'm talking about when the market has been fairly large. Post the 2009 recession, Vietnam, Korea, and Taiwan have been important in that time frame, which is much more significant. I've met with 32 EB-5 agents, in almost every case licensed by the governmental authorities in those countries for doing EB-5 business.
Many of our developers ask about this because the agent phenomena is something that you don't see in every country. So these are three countries which are agent heavy. Could you explain what an agent is, or rather
the kind of
agent you expect to see in these countries?
Well, there's no question. I mean, agents are in those countries, Vietnam, Korea, Taiwan, and also in China and Japan. In all of these are Confucian countries, and each one of these Confucian countries has a long and ancient tradition of what is called an emigration, E-M-I, not I-M-M-I, emigration agent. And an emigration agent is someone who is licensed to assist the citizens of that specific country when they are considering not necessarily immigration, but even a brief trip like a shopping trip to Los Angeles or a trip to Disney World for tourism or a business trip for, say, 3 weeks to meet with suppliers or customers in the United States or Australia or anywhere else in the world. And these agents have customarily been doing that for a long time, long before the EB-5 phenomenon became important to their businesses. And that's the way it works. And part of the reason is that in most countries, the role that the agent performs is actually taken up by Google. You see, in these countries, there are two major issues. One is language, which is a very big deal. And over and above the language, each of these countries has a tradition of working through networks and only through networks. So it would be very hard and difficult to develop that kind of rapport with those who can generate those kinds of investments just through financial intermediaries. They want to go through people who understand immigration issues. They're looking for a one-stop shop. Typically, what they're looking for is, let's say, immigration for the family, but preceded by many years of helping a child of the family go to a college. They're finding the college, helping them out with, for example, English language courses and teaching and showing them how to pass the TOEFL and the IELTS, etc.
These agents speak English, because obviously that's important for our developers, because these countries, and I have to add, they're not confusing countries, they're Confucius, followers of Confucius, right?
It's Confucian countries, not confusing countries. They're not confusing in the least. They're Confucian countries. They're
right.
They're influenced by the thoughts of the great philosopher Konza, as he's called, and which is Confucius in English. Right, absolutely. Right. Not confusing at all.
There is a similarity of culture in these countries also, won't you say?
Absolutely. It's not just the Lunar New Year, and it's not just the fact that most of their scripts are kind of funny, if you are used to the English script, for example, right? But that's not the reason. The main thing is that their ideas follow, for example, a strong central government, a tremendous emphasis on family duties. So yes, they are very similar. And that's why covering, I think, Vietnam, Korea, and Taiwan together as one pattern be appropriate. China, even though it is a Confucian country, is such a big factor in the market. That is something that we should cover separately. I am in China right now. I'll be spending the next 5.5 weeks in China. And I'd be happy to bring my thoughts and notes on the patterns I see to your audience another time. Japan, as we all know, is also a Confucian country, but its era in the sun is gone. Madara of Izumi, for example, is a Japanese case, right? But
yes,
to the best of my knowledge, less than 10 investments per year come from Japan at the moment. So somewhere around that very abysmally low number. So it's not a factor. But Vietnam, Korea, and Taiwan are each of them in the top five. And I do have some ideas and thoughts.
That's wonderful, Sam. I'm sure there's a lot of developers here who really want to hear your thoughts and really understand whether or not it's worth going out to these countries, because it's not easy. From the United States, it's far, it's expensive, and you really need to know where you're going.
Oh, well, yes. I mean, you certainly should think hard before you enter any particular market. And these three markets are certainly worth considering. They're certainly worth considering, but that doesn't mean it's right for everyone. So I'd be happy to tell you what I found.
Please, go ahead.
I did meet with 32 agents between these three countries. And these 32 agents, a few of them were small, but most of them were not. Most of them were fairly large agents, in not only in terms of their capacity and proven capacity in sending EB-5 buyers to the United States, but in addition to that, most of them in terms of their longevity in the field. I met a number of them who have been in business not a decade, not 2 decades, but a couple of them in over 3 decades in the field. So these people are knowledgeable agents. They know EB-5 inside out. The interesting thing is that some of them have U.S. qualified lawyers on staff full time.
Wow.
They met me with the U.S. qualified lawyers, and one of them had 4 U.S. qualified lawyers, and they all 4 came to the meeting with me. So we spent many, many, many hours together. And these 32 agents combined, to the best of my estimation, is approximately 50% of the capacity of Korea, Taiwan, Vietnam combined. So in other words, the patterns I've seen, I'm absolutely confident, are patterns for these markets and are not biased in any way by the agents that I met. I've met such a large number, with both in terms of absolute number as well as in terms of the proportion of the markets that they represent, that I think that's a fair cross-section to be able to draw generalizations about the market, Mona.
Are there really that many investors coming from these countries still?
Well, yes and no. There has been a major problem. So let's look at what they all told me. There was clear patterns. Firstly, a quarter of the agents of the country have gone out of business. They're no longer
That's
in EB-5, and many of them no longer in business at all. And the
is
reason is simple. Absolutely. Yeah. Even in the largest agents I visited, I saw 2 things. One is, I would see an office with room capacity probably for 50 people, but it was only half filled. The other half of the chairs and tables were empty. And they told me that they lost a lot of people during COVID, that COVID was a major, major, major problem for them, number one. COVID has really hurt these people badly. But it's more than that. almost all of them, especially the larger ones, complained about another factor. They said, look, basically the industry was shut down for 3 years. Why? Because they said, look, we had the regulation that went into effect in November 2019 with a much higher amount, and we had had an exhaustion of the market because of the wild rush before then. And then we had COVID, and then we had a situation where there was a lot of litigation, and there was a brief period for less than a week in June, I believe, of 2021. And after that, Congress got involved. Congress cut the program off completely, the Regional Center program. Pool Direct never really took off in a big way in any of these markets. So come March 2022, they had a new statute, come May, it's in effect. And all of a sudden, the very first thing that happens is that the industry ends up in a big fight with the USCIS over what's in the statute, because USCIS came up with that ridiculous assertion that every regional center needs to get recertified. And of course, the courts slapped USCIS down. There was a temporary restraining order and eventually a settlement.
You know, Sam, that's so right. During these last 3 years, we have been very quiet as far as bringing in investors and doing big events. And even the remote events and the virtual events which were happening, we really didn't see very much activity from these countries. I suppose if you close down for 3 years, you do lose all your contacts.
Well, here's what happened. I give you an actual example, Mona. Largest agent I visited in any of these three countries, I won't mention names, but this largest agent, this is what they told me. I met with the CEO and he says, look, we are very profitable. We have made a lot of money. And when COVID hit, we took a decision to ensure that we continued paying everyone their full salary, the entire staff their full salary, even though we had not a nickel of income. We decided that, and we paid the staff as long as it took, and said we have never furloughed anyone, we never laid anyone off, but we still lost half our staff. Can you beat that, Mona? Half the staff.
I believe they lost. It.
Yeah, and you know why? Because he said they were bored. There was nothing to do. And I couldn't keep them engaged. They said it's not the money. And they have, you know, left because they were bored. So this has really hurt the industry. Now, if I can bring in, Mona, some of the other points they mentioned, the invest amount was mentioned by surprisingly few. Less than 10% of these folks mentioned that the investment amount was causing a problem in their business. Less than 10%. Of course, all of them did mention that other countries are more attractive, and they brought up all the usual suspects, you know, the Caribbean, Europe, et cetera, et cetera. But what was apparent was clearly they all admitted when I, you know, pressed them gently on it, I didn't have to press them hard. One of them all admitted that America is clearly the number one brand. Okay. And the other factor, which of course they wouldn't say it so clearly, was that their EB-5 margins that they get in the EB-5 business, as opposed to everything else they do, are clearly the highest and are really very attractive to them. So if you summarize everything, Mona, I would say that the industry distribution network in these three out of the top five markets in the world has been badly affected, and it's been significantly reduced in size. So the supply chain, if you want to use that term, to connect up what's happening in America with what's happening in the places where the investors are, been affected by the Reform and Integrity Act and by things such as COVID, which were outside of everyone's control.
The big disadvantage of when you lose so much staff and you're bringing new people on is the fact that EB-5 is not simple. It's very complicated. It's difficult to understand. And new staff take a long time to just get up to speed. So I feel that this is an industry-wide problem that we are having.
Yes, that's true. Some of them did mention the issue of training. And that is certainly true. The interesting thing is, but please bear in mind that in this industry, in these countries, there have long been a large cadre of people who are knowledgeable about EB-5. And to some extent, they may have gone into other businesses, but you know how it works. You know, social networks, you can always reach them. If you don't reach them, your competition will, right?
Right.
So that's what's going on there. If one agent doesn't get them, another agent will. So there's a little bit of musical chairs. It's similar to what's going on in America, right? We've seen here people move from one regional center to another or one developer to another. And that's to some extent what's happening there too. So in any case, all I wanted to mention was that it is a factor which I think the industry in America may not be fully aware about. The developers and regional centers, for example, Mona, who work with you closely, may not necessarily understand that the distribution network is slowly getting up to speed. And in other words, what wires we are seeing today, and we are seeing wires, are just the beginning. It's going to pick up momentum pretty quickly in the coming months.
Yeah, I can see that. I think these are the top areas that you are going to, Sam. But let me ask you, what is the attitude towards coming back to America, given all of the political shenanigans we have seen over the last couple of years?
That was brought up by some of the agents. They were concerned. And it's the usual problem we have, right? They all said the same thing. They said that, okay, now we have President Biden, but maybe we will get another president who may not be from the same party. If that happens, things can change. And I had to explain to all of them that, look, the American president has exactly zero votes on the floor of the Congress. It is Congress who makes policy, and Congress has made policy on immigration. And the president simply applies that policy. And Reform and Integrity Act is an expression of Congress's policy. And that is not something that the next president can somehow undo. It is going to remain law of the land, and only a future Congress can. And generally speaking, you know, immigration legislation is not something that changes quickly. So they're stuck with it, whether they like it or not. And believe it or not, that they found reassuring, understanding that there would not be political uncertainty based upon the presidential elections going one way or the other was reassuring to the agents when I explained to them. It's not like they didn't know it at all. It was just like they live in parliamentary systems, so they don't understand our presidential system quite as well.
Right. What about the fact that European programs like Portugal and Cyprus and Ireland are all closing down? Surely that's a factor to bring people towards America.
Well, this is a good point. Every one of them brought up the fact that there were other more attractive programs. When I pressed them just a bit, just gently, they all admitted that America was almost always the number one choice for the families that they served. It's only when America, if for some reason, wouldn't work for a family, that they would look for other options. So our brand is good. Our brand is good. We do have competition, but so far, so good.
Sam, are you actually speaking with individual investors, or are you still really speaking with agents? And do these agents really understand some of the changes that came up in RIA? I mean, I'm sure they understand the integrity measures and stuff, but what the annual reserved visa categories means?
Yes, Mona, it's a bit of yes and no. We have to follow the law in each one of these countries. And the best as I understand it, we can only discuss EB-5 business with people licensed by these governments to conduct such business and not with individual investors. Now, of course, if there was some prior connection through a relative or some kind of friendship, there might probably be exceptions, but I'm not an expert in the securities laws of those countries. But what I can say is that you can't just go around placing advertisements for investors or talking directly to investors. That I believe, as best as I know from the attorneys I've asked this question to, who are qualified in these countries, have told me that that is prohibited to people from outside these countries, and even from people inside those countries if they don't have the proper licenses. Now, how do we know if they have the license? Of course, you can ask them and they'll show it to you. But in addition to that, there is a parallel, again, part of the Confucian heritage, Mona. They have parallel structures. One is a list of licensees, which is not released to the public, but maintained by the ministry concerned in each of these three countries. And secondly, what is available is usually a parallel structure of an association. So there is the Korean Immigration Association, the Taiwanese Immigrants Consultants Association, and their membership rosters are available online, albeit in Korean and traditional Chinese. You can be assured that no one would be a member of those associations without having secured the appropriate licenses from their government. So in Vietnam, Mona, it's different. Because Vietnam, at least so far, I have not been able to track down any publicly listed source which would be reliable. But, you know, it's a question of a bit of networking and a bit of Google searching, perhaps, and a lot of phone calls, and you finally end up with the people that are the proper agents. So does that answer your question, Mona, about who you can talk to in these countries?
Yeah, yes, it does. It does. Because what's actually happened over the last few years with these other countries emerging around the world, like India and other parts of Europe, etc., the whole dynamics of going out and finding investors is totally different. And the dynamics of Asia is again different. We have to recall the culture as well as the fact that these people are licensed and they have their own specific ways and methodologies.
Right, exactly. So now let me jump to the second part of your question, Mona, which you said, do they really understand the RIA? And the answer is no. Let me explain what I mean. The Human Integrity Act is becoming apparent that it is an act which is designed to ensure that all 50 states of the United States benefit from the bounty that is EB-5, and that as many of the 3,500 plus counties that constitute the United States benefit from this kind of investment, and it not get concentrated in just a small handful of places. Now, there is a couple of ways in which this is being accomplished, and you mentioned reserved visas, and there is a issue there. As you know, even at the 1,050,000 level, the Chinese, the Vietnamese, and the Indians are not eligible for the 3,200 visas, even if they happen to be in an HUA. You see, they have to go in the unreserved category. So therefore, it's in Korea and Taiwan, the 1,050,000 is an option, but it is really not an option for the Chinese, the Vietnamese, and the Indians.
Perhaps I should explain as to why they're not eligible. It's not a question of them not being eligible. Of course, everybody's eligible for every category. It's just that there is a backlog for these countries in the other categories, because after the RIA came through, there was a 20% allocation for investments in rural areas, a 10% allocation for investments in TEA, and a 2% allocation for investments in infrastructure, which started from scratch. So far, these countries are not backlogged. I think that's what you really mean, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You could certainly look at it that way. That would be appropriate. But the key point now that what I'm saying is that it's just beginning to sink in that the 10,000 visas, which were originally available because of the 3,200 being reserved, has been reduced to 6,800. Those affect the Chinese, the Vietnamese, and Indians by increasing their wait time for the old investors by anywhere from 30% or 40% extra time over and above the many, many years that they've had to wait and will have to wait. So it is a punishment that Congress has meted out for the agents who directed these investors in the past to these very few parts of America and not all the various 50 states. So that is why this unfair mechanism has been implemented, and they are very upset about it. They are quite clear that they like the old system. They want to continue to send investors into high rises in Midtown Manhattan and to some extent in LA and Miami. But now that, you know, they're slowly sinking in that they cannot do that, they are really dazed by it, is the only way I can explain their reaction. That is the one thing about the new law that is only beginning to sink in, Mona. It's not something that has fully sunk in yet, but as it sinks in more and more, they're realizing they have to work with new players, new developers, new regional centers, people who they earlier wouldn't give time of the day to.
Right.
Now, because of the fact that it's changed, they realize they have to deal with people who are newer to the market and different kinds of people than what they're accustomed to dealing with.
Yeah, it's a learning curve all over.
So that's right. So the other thing I noticed, Mona, was the return of China. As we know, that is what is going on. I mean, I've heard that in the last 4 weeks, I've heard this from the agents in Vietnam, Korea, Taiwan, by the way, that in the last 4 weeks, many, as in four, five, or six rural projects sold out in China. And these projects were good sized in the sense that there were 50 or so investors each, and they sold out in China, each of them within approximately 10 days. So things are really moving in China. As you know, some of these people have connections in China. They travel back and forth. Some of them, two or three of them, had offices in China. So they had some ears to the ground. And the return of China in this market, it's clear what's going on. Most of the projects don't want to deal with the largest market in the world, India. For the last 5 years, it's been number one in the world. They don't want to deal with it. They say Indian investors ask too many questions. So they're dropping India from their travel itineraries. Korea and Taiwan are being dropped because they're too small. Vietnam is a surprise. Vietnam is not being dropped despite China's return. Why? Interestingly, it appears that the reason is that they want to keep a plan B just in case something goes wrong in China. They want to have a backup, and Vietnam is the backup.
That has been proven to be the correct case over the years, because we just saw China just drop, when was it, 2018, 2019? It just completely disappeared.
Well, I mean, China came down 95% or something like that between 2016 and 2019. So yeah, it was a traumatic experience. It caused large numbers of players to leave the industry. And, you know, it had a lot of side effects, such as the rise of India. But change is what the only thing that's constant in life. And that's what we are seeing, Mona. So I have one more observation about priority processing, which slowly has impressed itself upon my thoughts while I was discussing with these agents, because almost all of them brought this point up. And the question was, what is priority processing? What does it mean? Are we really going to see faster processing? Now, my answer before I left the United States about 6.5 weeks ago was, you know, I don't know what priority processing means. And even though the statute commands the USCIS, in no uncertain terms, to process everything within a very specific short deadline of 6 months, is it really going to happen? I would say not based upon the past experience of the USCIS. You know, I don't think we can say that. But now I'm beginning to understand what the agency thinks priority processing might be based upon just my continuously being asked this question again and again by these agents. I think what USCIS means is something along these lines, that if it's rural, then we'll process it whenever we finish drinking our coffee, which could be in 2 years or who knows how many years. But if it's urban, then guess what? We're just going to put it aside in the corner somewhere. We'll come back to it when we feel like it, which could be when. We have no idea. First, we're going to drink the coffee. Then we're going to handle all these rural applications. And then we're going to see if we have any time, you know, after drinking perhaps some more coffee, to worry about what to do with the urban ones. And so what I'm trying to say is that these agents are slowly confronting the fact that they really must look closely at rural projects in a way that they've never done before, want to be ostriches and stick their necks into the ground. I think some of them are beginning to see that that may not be the world's best strategy, given how USCIS has historically handled commandments from Congress. Simona, those are my observations upon my visiting close to 50% of the capacity of the three of the top five countries in EB5.
Well, you know, IIUSA and EB5 Investors Magazine have already had events out in these countries. So it started to resonate with people that these are the ways to go around to get to these countries. But I would ask you, Sam, for developers who might be listening to this show, how do you find these agents? How do you get to the end point?
Well, as I mentioned to you, the Korean Emigration Association and the Taiwanese Immigrants Consultants Association maintain their agent membership roster online. So that is almost an entire mirror image of everyone licensed in those countries. There's no official compulsion once you've been licensed by the governments of those countries in Korea and Taiwan, respectively, to become part of these associations. But there is an implicit social compact, if you will, a business understanding that you would be a member in good standing of these associations if you indeed are licensed by those governments. And if you're not, sometimes questions follow. In fact, in Taiwan, there's recently been some developments, and the Immigrant Consultant Association has been kind of delegated the task by the Ministry, as best as I could understand it, of enforcing a certain level of what we might call in America continuing education to ensure that their licenses remain current. So in that sense, these two associations have become indispensable. If you are a developer or if you are a regional center and you're new to the market and you don't have time to wait for 1 year for the next conference, you can certainly avail of both these resources online. Vietnam is a little harder. You're going to have to go through the grapevine and through Google and do a significant amount of calling to end up with people who count. But in Korea and Taiwan, it's child's play, Mona.
You know, Sam, the big takeaway I think we can have from this discussion is that these areas, Korea, Taiwan, Vietnam, they're still very hot for EB5. They are the places to go, but we have to do a lot more hard work to get that market back up to where it was, say, back in 2017.
I would say that you're completely on the mark, that these are very much valid top EB5 countries. More wires are flowing from these countries and will continue to flow from these countries. I would say in dollar terms, they're going to probably exceed what we saw in 2017 because of the increase of the investment amount. So even if we were to see, let's say, a 10% reduction in the number of investors, we'll see a higher number of dollars coming in from these three markets.
Those are definitely great insights. Sam Udani, thank you once again for coming on EB5 Investment Voice.
My pleasure.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.